This is an ABC podcast.
This is Baby Talk Podcast with Penny Johnston.
During this pandemic, it probably wouldn't come as a surprise to you that women's health is suffering. Did you know that 2 weeks ago it was Women's Health Week? Well, to be honest, I couldn't get this interview to air on time. Lockdowns and homeschooling put the kibosh on a fast turnaround for me. But Danielle Dobson is an author, speaker, coach and women's advocate, and she wants to shine a light on the pressures of stereotypes that women labour under. Danielle calls it the gender code, a code of beliefs that say that women are the carers and men are the providers and that we are intrinsically different.
The biggest one is when we have children. Massive shift there. Typically women revert to the gender stereotypes of doing the caring work and taking on the lion's share of the unpaid labour.
Well, the COVID-19 pandemic has only amplified this issue, with a global study by Deloitte finding that 23% of Australian women are considering leaving the workforce because of the pandemic. 77% of women have had an increased workload because of the pandemic. And 66% say they bear the greatest responsibility for household tasks. This has combined to create a perfect storm for women's health. So women are stretched emotionally, mentally, financially as they try to put the needs of everyone around them first, trying to do more with less time, less money and way less enthusiasm. Danielle, I'm going to get you to explain exactly what is the gender code.
Great question, because it can be a bit cryptic, so it's good to explain it. What I discovered through all this research is the gender code is that set of default beliefs that many of us recognise about the quote-unquote natural differences between men and women. And these beliefs create stereotypes that keep the genders firmly in different boxes, and it specifically keeps women from pursuing their dreams and achieving success in work and life and in the way we contribute to society. And what I mean by that is it pigeonholes women as carers and men as providers. The demarcation like this along gender lines is really detrimental because it stops each and every one of us, like women and men, everyone, from stepping into our true potential and fully contributing at home, at work, and society. And the thing is, it's so deeply embedded. It's been building for millennia, and it's like a societal algorithm. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, but it's designed to keep make sure women are in a support role and men are typically in a provider role.
I think that when I was younger, now I'm giving away my age. When I was younger, it was a bit easier because women were nurses and primary school teachers and secretaries, and they weren't really allowed to be pilots. The workplaces had to adapt, but for some of us, we can sort of feel like home life, which is possibly the harder one to change, hasn't.
Absolutely, and you're so right, because it wasn't actually that long ago that women had to resign from their job, like in corporate and in businesses, when they got married. That wasn't that long ago. That was last century, end of last century. So this sort of gender coding has been there for a long time, and we do see and notice and feel the need for change, but because it's been building for so long, and it's this coding, you know, we use the gender code is kind of the overarching umbrella, and then we build our own personal code based on everything that we're exposed to throughout our lives. So our family dynamics, like, you know, our parents, our sibling relationships, our relationships at school, expectations placed on us, the messages that we were exposed to and that we listened to the most, and, you know, all depends on who they were by and how often they told us. This is all building into this personal code, but driven by the gender code. So it is changing, and this period of change is tough. And I think if I think back to my mum, yeah, I'm a 70s kid, so I was born in the 70s. My mum did the work and the home single-handed, and she didn't have a model of how to do it. So she did it on her own because her mum stayed at home with 8 children. My mum didn't have a model, and I think many women of that era haven't had the model of how to do it. So they've done it all by themselves. next generations have had a chance to piece things together or do things differently, but there's so much that's on autopilot that we don't really pay attention to.
And if that wasn't depressing enough, let's throw a global pandemic into this, and with so many of us stuck at lockdown, has bloody COVID increased the negative effect of this gender bias for women?
Yes, it has. It's really shone the spotlight on who does what we value, what's expected versus what is prized. And unfortunately, what we see a lot globally is where the partner, so we're talking about heterosexual couples where there's a whole lot of expectations. And just to step back from the pandemic, the two biggest transition phases of women's lives and men, where the gender stereotypes and gender norms really come into play, are when we cohabitate. So when we move in with a romantic partner, that's where the home gender stereotype and roles and expectations can set in. And then the big one, the biggest one, is when we have children. Massive shift there. Typically, women revert to the gender stereotypes of doing the caring work and taking on the lion's share of the unpaid labour. So we've got that happening already. And then to manage the unpaid labour, what a vast majority of women do, and we know this from the makeup of the workforce, so predominantly women are in part-time and casual employment. A lot of that, if we just think of it ourselves, that's to be able to manage the massive unpaid load of caring, the unpaid work and the unpaid caring. So we take lesser roles. We quite often not the primary breadwinner. And because we tend to value breadwinning, providing, competition, money, resources more highly, we automatically privilege and elevate the, if it's the male in the family, his role, his work, and we click into that support role. So we're busy supporting them and everyone else that we're caring for. And then in this pandemic, trying to run our businesses, trying to look after our people at work, trying to homeschool. And it's really amplified this issue. And a global study by Deloitte found that 23% of women are considering leaving the workforce due to the pandemic. And around about 77 or high 70s of women had an increased workload due to the pandemic when we're already stretched, already at, you know, almost breaking point. And 66% said they bear the greatest responsibility for household tasks. And that's just tasks. That's not the mental load that goes with that. So it has been immense.
But did we have a choice?
It's a really great question. And because a lot of the argument, you know, the robust discussion around this does often drill back down to choice. And I would say, yes, absolutely, we do have a choice. The question that I ask, though, is do we know all the elements that are at play here? Have we shone the light and really opened up to everything that's happening? Or is there a part that's on autopilot? So when I talk about the gender code and breaking it, before we do that, we've got to go through a process of getting curious about how the gender code and stereotyping is actually playing out in our life right now and in the life of everyone around us. So we've got to think about the impact that it's having and if we want to make changes. And if we do, decide what we value and we want to keep, you know, about our code and the gender code, because not everything, chuck out everything, and what you need to let go of and what new thoughts and practices and habits we need to start. So I think we can make choices, but we need to know what's at play, how we got here and why we got here, the impact it's having, before we can then move forward and make choices. So yes, it is a choice, but there's a lot to it before we make those choices.
You've got a really interesting question that you ask of women, and this is very hard to answer. You ask them, what are you putting up with at your own expense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, because what I notice in my research and, you know, people I love and women around me, was they were taking on a lot. This is me too, at one stage, taking on a lot, doing a lot for everyone else, setting everyone else up for success around them. And that is beautiful, and that is really, really great, and it's so needed. We need people to do that in our society. But the problem was that the intentions for doing it weren't necessarily ones that were going to be sustainable. So it was to keep other people happy, to make sure that everyone else is prioritised and not equally prioritising themselves. So what happens is that you can get into resentment and anxiety, exhaustion, burnout, because of the intentions behind it were really all about everyone else, and that is not sustainable long term.
I suppose when it's children involved, you know, you might feel like you don't have a choice.
Yes, and this is a really great point. So part of navigating through that is number one, like, accepting the situation that we're all in right now, or that each of us are in, so how unique context. And when I say acceptance, and this is in particular with the pandemic right now, it doesn't mean approval. It doesn't mean we approve of it. I mean, the homeschooling and the pressures of work and everything, it is really tough. So acceptance doesn't mean approval, but accepting rather than fighting it, because then we can redirect that energy towards managing through it with a clearer head and heart. So I used to actually think that finding out what's most important is the first step, but it's actually accepting what is. And then working out what's most important. So like family or work or community, well-being, or your values like freedom, connection, growth, and putting that right at the centre of everything you do and use it as a guide. So for instance, if growth is really important to you and you're doing everything you can to care for your important people and your kids and everyone in your world, and you're doing it because you want them to grow and, you know, you're growing in the process, then it becomes something that you do because it's aligned with who you are and what's most important. And then it can become more of a choice than a sacrifice, because you're choosing to do this because it's aligned with the things that are most important to you. And that is so much more of a sustainable way of looking at it, and energy management, because anytime we use our energy to fight things or to resent all those like really negative emotions and feelings, which are okay to have, absolutely, we're using our energy that we could be using for doing those things that are most important to us, and using that as an internal compass for decision making. And then it becomes a lot more of being in the driver's seat rather than the passenger seat.
The statistics from Deloitte about some women leaving the workforce, you know, it might not all be bad. I mean, some women might decide, okay, I am not going to pay down the mortgage and I'd rather be able to be at home more, or it might be part of a positive choice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm hearing this. So if we look at a macro level, those numbers seem scary. They seem frustrating. But if we look at a micro level, if those choices to do that, if you can manage it financially, or it's ticking your meaning and purpose boxes to be at home, that's totally okay. Because if you're doing that internal work or going through that process of working out what is most important to you, if it's the health, well-being and human flourishing of everyone in your family and you want to focus there, then that's okay. It's totally okay. The only thing I would say with that, and I speak to people about it all the time, is just keep that career fire burning, or keep something burning. And sometimes it might be a flicker and sometimes it's a furnace, but keep connected with your career if you're going to focus your attention on your family, because you never know when you want to get back in. So it's just to keep that fire burning. But it's absolutely, if that's in line with what's most important to you and that is fueling you and you can see everyone flourishing, then that is totally okay.
We can be a bit grumpy about our partners not doing this or not doing that, but sometimes you need to step up to ask for the help.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
We can't be,
yes,
wusses about this.
Yeah, great, great point. And it's interesting, I talk about this, about conversations, like having crucial conversations. And the first most important conversation you've got to have is with yourself. So thinking about those things, what is most important to me, having, you know, that internal compass as your anchor, as your foundation, when you know what's most important to yourself, having the crucial conversations with everyone else in your life is so much easier because you can come back to that internal compass and that anchor. So knowing what's most important to you is the first thing. And then having the conversations with your important person, and let's say it's your partner at home, having these boundary discussions, and I talk about this in my book, but it's having these discussions saying, this is really important to me. Can we have it? Can we have a talk? So what's okay is that you drive the kids to soccer practice, that you're working from home right now, you have your own office and you come out when you want to. What's not okay is then you expect me to be the lead parent all the time and take on the majority. It's not okay because I feel, you know, X, Y, Z. And having that conversation, and the thing is, it's going to be messy and clunky and it's going to be hard. It's not going to be a one-time thing. But, you know, when they love you and they want the best for you and they want to see you flourish, they'll do, you know, they'll, you know, typically work with you. And I think the other really important thing is to communicate what done looks like. So, you know, asking for help, and a simple thing is, say, the dishes or the washing or whatever it is, you know, when we've got really young children, done looks like nothing in the sink. If that's your done looks like nothing in the sink at all. You know, it's all done. Done looks like the bathroom cleaned at the end of it. Because the more clarity that you can give around the task or what you're asking them to do, the more likelihood of success. And then also changing the language. So I'm a single parent with three boys. And I, after all this research and the book and everything, I was like, oh, I'm part of this problem. So I was like, right, we're changing the language here. What you're doing when you hang out the washing is you are contributing to the family operating system. That's an important part of the family operating system. If you want to think that you're helping mum, that's okay, but I don't see it as helping mum. I see it as your contribution really matters, because if you don't get the washing out, we don't have you don't have clean clothes to wear, which has consequences. But it's not helping mum, it's contributing to the family operating system. And being boys, they're more onto that. They're 10, 12 and 14. So they
like a system.
They get that. Yeah, they like a system that their contribution matters and that they're doing something that's contributing to the overall family operating system. And then we're taking the onus off mum to be the CEO, the COO, and then everything down to the toilet cleaner. I mean, how many CEOs clean the toilets?
Yeah, not many.
I actually said to them one time, I said, boys, I actually didn't get any training in this. It was an on-the-job, learn-as-you-go type of thing that I had to do. So you guys are equally capable as me, and you know what? You get the benefit of me training you to do it. You know, and I'm doing like the washing, it's like shake, stretch, peg. You know, just three simple steps, you know, to hang it out. And so I have this thing, it's where I start with capable. And so everyone in the house is capable, like now my youngest is 10, of doing everything that I can do. Maybe not the same standard, but they've got to start somewhere. So I look at it as a training program.
Yeah.
That I'm helping them with.
You're turning
to be self-sufficient.
And you're turning them into great flatmates and fabulous partners.
Absolutely.
Do you have some advice for us? Because we're all exhausted. You know, how can we kind of keep this little ember of getting rid of the gender code going until lockdown ends and we have our support mechanisms back again?
Well, there's a couple of parts. Like, there's the mindset part. I think there's, like we talked about before, about accepting and remembering what's important to us. And one other thing I would say is know this, that you are doing your best, the best you can, with the internal and external resources you've got right now, and it's okay. We all show how we care for our important people differently, and that's okay. So that's kind of like the mindset stuff. And I know it can be exhausting, the conversations, but I think the more we can get clear about what's important, what we need, and asking for help, just, you know, it sounds simple, I know. I mean, it sounds simple words, but hard to do. And I think what I've been finding is helping people is to just do a support review. So thinking about the people in your personal and professional network and how you contribute to setting them up for success and how good it makes you feel. And Jacinta mentioned this too about the helper's high. You know, when you help somebody, it actually releases endorphins and dopamine. And so it's really great for your own well-being. And I know that sounds really hard sometimes to do when we're giving so much and the tank is so empty. But supporting others, next time you do that, just take notice of how you feel after you do help someone. And if you do get that helper's high and the effect that it has on you, and remember that, because when you ask for help, that's what you give to others. So that if you need a motivator to ask for some help, you know, leveraging your networking, asking people to support you, remember that that's going to make them feel good. So I use that a lot when I was going through this process of trying to ask for help and building up a support network when a lot of things fell away after our marriage relationship ended. Had to sort of start asking for help, and I needed all these special motivators to do it. And that was one of the big ones. It's like, yes, I'll give them the helper's high if I ask for help. So I think that's one of the biggest ones, staying connected. You know, we talk about loneliness a lot, you know, increasingly a big issue. Loneliness is a lot of the times simplified is the expectation gap between the relationships you have and the relationships you want, and that includes the relationship with yourself. So if you can stay connected to yourself, if you can work out what's most important, is playing to your unique strengths, which are so different to anyone else's, having those crucial conversations, doing a support review, they're kind of the crucial foundations. And then, you know what, you have more energy to then be able to think more clearly, okay, I will do those other things like having more water, going for a walk, whatever they are. But, you know, using that internal clarity, because that's the only thing we've got control over right now, unfortunately.
Danielle, is there any parting good advice?
Look, it's just so hard. It's really hard to help people, you know, broadly right now without knowing what their unique context is. And
yeah,
I listening to a couple of your episodes, it seems like your listeners would be having the small children, babies, yeah, really little. And they're in a really tough situation right now. Mm. And so I feel like keeping on saying, have water, get more sleep. I mean, I know when I was there, I had hardly any sleep, you know, 3 kids under 4, let alone the pandemic. But I feel like the only thing we have control over right now is our perception and how we see the world rather than how the world is. We've got no control. So understanding that they're a lot more powerful than they feel right now, because they have that internal power that they can use. But I would love to just give, you know, 3 top tips or something like that, but I don't want to add to their to-do list. They've got enough to do. So I'd love to be able to give a silver bullet, but it's really
just a bit tricky. Danielle Dobson, author, speaker, coach. She's written a book called Breaking the Gender Code, and there will be a link on the Baby Talk website, which is really handy if you would like to listen to another episode, because Baby Talk is a weekly podcast that covers some really tricky topics about being a new parent. But we also take some time to have fun as well, like last week's episode where we explored a project that you might like to take on along with a new baby. Have you ever thought of future steading? We talked to Jade Miles from Black Barn Farm about the delightful idea of selling up and moving to a big block in the country to become self-sufficient.
And other people think that it's inaccessible because it's just for hippies. And so we love it, but we just felt like those around us were saying, oh, we love the way you live, but we can't do that because we don't understand permaculture, or we can't do that because we're not on land. And so my husband and I were sitting around one day saying, you know, it's not about that. It's about living in a way where tomorrow matters, where you think about all of your decisions and you celebrate the simple things and you're connected to the natural world and you're connected to seasons and you really, really love everything that's local. It's all of that stuff, but it needs to be accessible and it needs to be joyful.
Hey, there's a pandemic on. We're all allowed to dream big. I'm Penny Johnston. I will catch you next time on Baby Talk.
ABC Baby Talk is a weekly podcast on ABC Radio, wherever you get your podcasts, and on the ABC Listen app. Like us on Facebook to find out as soon as a new episode is ready. Just search for ABC Baby Talk.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.